How are you guys? Was that Danny?
Yeah.
You see that?
I would have to, I'm really terrible. I get my own name sometimes.
Hi, how are you?
Good people.
Yeah.
Hey, what's up?
Is it?
Good, how are you?
Sounds gonna be pretty.
Really good.
Been a long time.
No, yeah.
Yeah.
She got a bunch of questions, so.
Really?
Yeah, we need to work on it.
No. I got a happy hour if I can think.
Okay.
No.
Kidding.
Business comes first.
And if it'll be all that fine.
They only have some sections.
Yeah.
Oh, it's got everybody we've ever had.
I'm trying to see.
Yeah, that is.
I've seen that.
Yeah, I was like.
Michael's not showing up.
When did that happen?
He's out of town.
Somebody has it cleared it up.
Does Nancy usually come to these meetings?
I think they are.
She usually.
Yeah.
But she has.
But Betsy told me.
Okay.
Oh, Betsy's not coming? Yeah, she told me last night she couldn't make it, so. And Michael. Yeah.
Okay.
Important people, no, I'm kidding.
Well, I got that on tape.
Oh, no!
I'm sending that to your boss.
Life is run by those that show up.
No, we have to. Oh, I don't.
I offered the message here and bring it.
That's great.
I'll just have one done. Why don't you just come in and swap your sign and your.
I am, because they didn't tell me I was supposed to bring anything.
Oh, they did, yes, you guys. No. No, see that, just look on her face, too.
Nancy has?
Never mind.
Alcoholic beverages. Do you have it, Nancy?
I don't really even have it, so, you know, it's the back end.
Yeah. I'm sure you're not.
How was your vacation?
It was good, I feel like it was long, sure, it was.
Yeah. Was the, the house and everything was okay?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I'm property.
Do you have, do you like there in the park office?
Do we?
Parks, yes.
Okay.
Should have. I don't know if anybody fits it.
Yeah.
I don't have to get in there. We have a printer.
That's good.
Oh, back on the shore, so they can hold it.
Okay.
Sorry.
This one does have your name on it, but you don't care, right?
Yeah, we have a glass.
So back to the. Yeah, back to the city. The city, yeah.
Yeah. Right.
I saw Adriana at the, Parks and Rec.
Oh, yeah.
She left before it got really heated.
Yeah, or just have a whole package?
We are good to go.
All right, good afternoon. Calling to order the audit committee meeting for the fourth quarter for Carson City. Let's take a roll call.
Chairperson Ferguson.
Present.
Vice Chairperson Bertrand. Member Bagwell.
Here.
Member Mayhorn.
Here.
Member Strasburg. Quorum is present.
Thank you. Public comments and discussion. The public is invited at this time to comment and discuss any topic that is relevant to or within the authority of the Carson City Audit Committee. In order for members of the public to participate in the committee's consideration of agenda item, the committee strongly encourages members of the public to comment on an agenda item drained the item itself. No action may be taken on a matter raised under public comment unless there is an item that is specifically included on the agenda as an item upon which an action may be taken. Any comments from the public? And we don't have any, so no, none at this time. Thank you. Possible motion or action is approval of the July 31st, 2018 minutes, which were included in the packet for distribution. Any comments, questions, concerns on that?
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes of the January 31st Carson City Audit Committee meeting.
July.
Did I not say July?
July 31st.
January. It's been a long week today. Take two. I make a motion to approve the minutes of the July 31st Carson City Audit Committee meeting.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Approved. Okay. Possible action item is adoption of the agenda. Is there any open for discussion? Is there any changes to the agenda as it's proposed?
Yeah, can I, on 6D, it's actually, it's not a possible action. It's going to be discussion.
Okay.
They are not quite done that procedure, so they're here to present where they are on it.
Okay. Sounds good. So I'll take that off as an action item. Okay, so the agenda, we don't need to formally approve it, right? Just, no, so.
And Mr. Chair, with respect to item 6D, you can just leave it as is. I mean, it's. I mean, for possible action is a mandate that the board take action.
Right.
But, I agree with Sherry. She's just giving the board a heads up.
Okay, great. All right, meeting item 6A, for possible action discussion and possible action regarding the monitoring review closure of the internal audit findings included in the audit finding tracker report and possible recommendations to the Board of Supervisors for closure of completed projects. Sherry's going to cover this for the staff, right?
I am. Good evening. So this is pretty much the exact same thing you got last time. We have made some progress on it. So I'd like to go through each page and kind of talk about the ones I think we can close, get your guys' opinion. So on the internal controls review, the very first page, we have, this is kind of an ongoing policies update item, so unless we want to keep it open forever, it might be a time to close it. Policy Tech, our system, does alert us as to when it's time to update and read the policy. So there's something, you know, in our system that will make sure it's being updated.
So I'm fine with the potential of closing that as long as I have an assurance that someone's monitoring that they're actually doing the policy tech work. So it doesn't do any good if we get alerts that tell us to do something and you just ignore them. So we do have the policy of somebody's job. It is to actually review that the department heads are clearing their policies.
Yeah, I get notices from HR when I don't do mine.
Okay, so HR is having the overall responsibility to make sure policy tech is up to date?
Yeah. I think they just go in and see what has been updated and what hasn't and send out an email.
Okay, I just want to make sure it's not getting dropped through the way by. Okay.
Hey, just a quick question, just so I'm clear, with the new ERP system, does that have policy tracking capabilities in it, or are we going to keep policy tech for?
As far as I know, we're going to keep policy tech.
Okay.
We didn't even look at a module for that in ERP if they do have one. We looked at a contracts module, but we didn't look at a policy module.
I want to make sure I was clear on that. Thank you.
All right. So the payroll internal controls one. This one I did update the policy. It's in the review process of Policy Tech. So once it's approved, then it's shot out to all the employees. So I'm not sure if you want to close that now or wait until it's shot out to all the employees. But it has been updated. And so I wasn't sure if this was wanting to close it now or wait.
Yeah, and I had a question on this because this one was, it wasn't really around the lack of procedural documentation. It just says the procedures were not followed with regard to the time card approvals. So it's not really that the policy or procedure wasn't there. It was, there was some, you know, some gaps in what was supposed to be done. And I'm just enlighten me as far as what payroll time and attendance system are we using, or is it all pretty much manual?
It's HTE, and then the police department has a different system, Telestaff, I believe it's called. Huh? Yeah, but I think they call it Telestaff. So we have updated. The problem was that people were signing off like Wednesday on the timesheet, and then Thursday is our actual end of pay period. So they were putting 8 hours for Thursday and signing off because most of us are full-time and work 40 hours. And they didn't like that, obviously. That makes sense. They want to wait until the end of Thursday. So we notified employees months and months ago of this problem and that it, you know, we wouldn't accept timesheets that were like this anymore. That if they were on vacation, they just had to come in after their vacation and sign off. The policy was unclear. It didn't really have dates or times of when this stuff had to happen. So we decided to make it clearer. We went in and updated the policy as well.
Again, HTE, is that kind of the time and attendance functionality within that, is that being replaced with the new ERP?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so that'll all change here. And are we still looking at 9 months sometime next year?
Yes. The policy will probably be the same, though. They'll still submit or approve their time card after at Thursday at 5. They won't be able to do it early.
Right, but shouldn't the system inherently not let them do that if we don't want them to do it? So
well,
can the controls be built into the systematic, you know, into the system so that that doesn't happen, basically?
Yes, they can. It was the actual Excel version of time card that we were using that was signed off by the employee early.
Okay, got
so
it.
So the new system will have electronic signatures.
Okay.
Yeah. It's manual before, and now we'll have an electronic, so I really don't see any reason to keep the audit item open considering we're going to the new system, and I would assume a year after implementation of the new ERP system, then that will be a risk factor that we turn around and audit that we caught all the manual issues have been corrected in the online versions, supposedly. We'll hope. We can only have hope.
Okay, any other discussion on that end? I think we're in agreement that it can be closed. The next one's the internal controls review. Oh, sorry. We flipped the wrong way. Yeah.
Sorry. Thank you. This is the P-card one. These ones, again, these were policy issues. They were manual, but, you know, we have informed the employees how they have to do this months ago. It was just a matter of updating the policy, which I have done. Again, this is in review and will be shout out to all the employees. So, you know, after the review process is done.
And maybe it's just P-cards in general because I have a personal bent on P-cards just because I think that's an area that can quickly get out of control. In your department, do you, like, just pick one or two every month or two and just check them? You know, is there a system that you're actually testing yourself that the policies and procedures and that there's nothing going out on a purchasing card that's inappropriate?
Our department reviews every single transaction on every single P card every single month. So the process is that the department has to have two eyes on every transaction. So the department has an approver at their level to make sure it's an appropriate transaction. And then finance looks at it to make sure it's an appropriate account and that, you know, it doesn't look like they're spending money on liquor or inappropriate expenses. And then after that, we post it. So we don't post it until we look at every single transaction. And that includes the issues here.
I guess what I'm looking for, though, a little bit on this one, Sherry, is that just maybe occasionally you pull a transaction. Again, it's not that you could look at something and say, okay, liquor looks appropriate in the Parks and Rec department because we have all the baseball games and concession stands, so it can look appropriate. But are you looking for appropriateness of volume and things? Because those are stuff that also personally walk home. You know, it's an item that you'd use not just in a governmental setting. I guess that's what I'm after. Is that just occasionally someone's testing it? Or maybe, again, that's one that will have to come up on risk and check every so often that someone looks for the validity of the volume of the purchases.
Yeah, right now I don't. I do my departments. I look at my department's P-cards, but I don't do any testing. I agree, P-cards is a risk area, and I would not be opposed to have an internal audit look at them occasionally because you're right, it's a real risk area.
Real quick, on finding one, it says the P-card manual was unclear relative to P-card processes. That's pretty vague. Has the P-card manual been updated? And my question is, do the users that have P-cards sign off on something saying, you know, this will only be used for, you know, appropriate city expenses and so forth, and you'll submit your receipts within X amount of time and so forth?
Absolutely. We have a purchase P-card manual that was updated as well as a policy that was updated. So they both are work together to make sure the employee signs the manual, that they've read it and understand it before they get their P-card. And we have taken P-cards away for people who have, you know, not been responsible using them.
Okay, and that thing that the user signs, does it say, you know, there'll be no shared use of this P-card? Because that was the finding number two. Just so that's clear that people shouldn't be, you know, allowing others to use their P-card.
So finding number two, there are a couple of shared P-cards based on just the way it works. So the fire department has one shared P-card. So when they go out of state on a fire, they can buy what they need to buy. It's not always the same guy who's going to get that P-card. It's just whoever's sent out. So they do have one P-card that is sent out with the fire department. I believe the Guardian also has a P-card like that she lets her volunteers use. It is spelled out in the manual that those P-cards are the responsibility of the department head.
Okay,
so if
great.
They have a volunteer or an employee that goes nuts, then, you know, the department head is responsible.
One more question on that. You had said that in your department, you check every transaction. How are the other departments treating P-cards with respect to that? Do you know how they are being treated?
Well, I sure hope every department head is reviewing or supervisor is reviewing their employees' transactions.
Okay.
Because I don't, especially Public Works, they buy things on there. I have no idea what it is.
I wouldn't expect you to do that. But.
Right. So that's the point of the department approval,
yes,
is making sure it's something that they used for a job.
Okay.
Their work.
Okay, any other comments, questions?
Love P-cards.
They actually have a great rebate. We do love P-cards.
Mm-hmm. who's the do you know who the issuer is? Who handles the P-card?
Bank of America.
BOA, okay.
Yeah. The next one is the Public Guardian Review from 2017. This item is kind of a duplicate because it's also included on the 18 review that they did, so I'm recommending closure on this one as well.
We're good with that.
All right. Purchasing an AP is next. This one I'm recommending closure on the first, or actually all four. I went ahead and we dispersed the stamps in March for the issue with the receipts documentation of items. We disperse stamps to every department where they stamp it, initial it, and date it when they receive the item. And then that's matched with the invoice, or it's right on the invoice where another person is processing that invoice and paying it. So just documentation. That procedure is now spelled out in the procedures, and which, again, once it's reviewed, will go out to all the employees.
Hey, real quick, too, with the new ERP system, did we select the procurement module?
We did.
Okay. And the current system, are we using HGE for So it sounds like it's a little manual, though, if we're using stamps and so forth.
Yep.
Okay.
Most of HD is quite manual.
Is the new system more automated as far as having the person go in and actually receive on the purchase order?
I think some of it will be inventory, some of the items, but I'm not sure all of them will be. We're kind of in the middle of implementation, so I can't tell you either exactly right now.
Thanks.
Sorry. I'm looking at this item number 5 real quick. Oh, yeah, item number 5, that's been included in the manual. It's done as well.
Hey, on number 5 there, it says the vendor name listed on the two purchase invoices did not match the vendor name on the edit list and check. So that was there a, is this essentially saying there was a mismatch between the procurement system and the check?
What happened, this exact item was that one company was bought out by another company. So it was the same exact billing address and everything, and the name just changed. And we didn't fix it in the system. So we are fixing those now as we run across them.
In the procurement system or the invoice system?
The invoice system, our vendor list, basically.
Do we have, who maintains supplier control? So that would be like typically supplier control would maintain that and make sure that the names and addresses within both the procurement and invoice systems match, and anytime there's an adjustment to that, it goes to like basically one or two people that are the only ones that can change.
Yeah, that's in my department. There's only one or two people that can change information on the vendors in my department, and when we do run across that where a vendor doesn't match a vendor number that they've used, we'll contact the old vendor in our system and see if they had a change in name or a buyout or what happened, why we have this invoice with all their information in a different name.
Okay, got it.
Be good on that one?
Any other questions here? Some of that stuff, if we're changing the procurement system, you know, going from HCE to the new ERP, some of this is going to change, right? And a lot of it's policy updates or, you know, lack of documentation. The segregation of duties one and number two, I'm not sure if that's being addressed with the new ERP. But it looks like there was separation of the duties issues between receipt of goods and the actual AP transaction. So I'm not sure if you have any.
We did address that in the new policy. Some departments are really small, and so there's always going to be two sets of eyes. There's always going to be the person putting the invoice in the system and a person approving it. So, unfortunately, some departments only have one person to receipt that item and put it in the system, and then there'll be another person reviewing it. So, because the department's really small. But in all cases, there's always two eyes on all transactions. We, in the policy that I wrote, I recommend 3. But if your department's really small, we don't have much choice.
Okay, good.
I was trying to remember something on that one, Sherry, on the super small ones. Again, maybe that's the compensating control is a third reviewer occasionally just picks one or two transactions to make sure everything's, you know, because issues can happen in a small one just as equally as well as in a large. So I just recommend anywhere you know that we have not as strong of internal controls, you know, that we do our own little occasional review. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Luckily, those very small departments usually have a very small budget, so there's usually not a huge risk in that area.
Hey, one other question. Do we ever, internally, do we do any periodic database comparison between P-card payments and actual invoices to check for duplicate payments?
The system does that automatically, believe it or not. When we put in the invoice number on any transaction, it'll flash duplicate, duplicate. Sometimes we let that go through if we charge an invoice to a couple different departments. But in every case, we double check to make sure we haven't paid that invoice before.
Okay.
And that's checked twice. That's checked at the department level when it flashes. And then our department's alerted when we do the final check run that there's a duplicate, and we double check on each one of those duplicates.
Thank you. So we're proposing to close all these four findings, right?
I am recommending that.
Are we good? Okay. I think we're in agreement.
Okay. The capital projects one, most of the dates aren't quite here yet. I think there's one that's November of 18, which is around the corner, but not quite here yet. So I figured we could talk about that one next time. I didn't recommend closure on any of those. The public guardian, as you know, we have a new public guardian, so she's trying to wrap her brain around her department right now and hasn't had much chance to get her brain around this. However, items 1, 4, and 5, I'm recommending closure because number 1 is a procedure that the previous public guardian did put in place, and the new public guardian is aware of this. She has the sheet, so she should follow that in those footsteps. And then 4 and 5 are about updating policies, which, again, we can leave it there forever or we can close it. And then there's item 5 I don't really understand because it relates to a follow-up study, which is something you guys would determine later. So I think we can close that too.
On the fifth one, it was really even with the Board of Supervisors to be able to watch, because now quarterly the public guardian comes and actually gives a report at the board level. And so that if the board felt anything was going awry, we would have referred it back here for audit. It's one we took very seriously at the Board of Supervisors level because we have a pretty high bar for our fiduciary relationship with those protectees. So that one really was an item left to determine whether the board thought another audit, but I would suggest you could close it from this level, and then we could just determine whether or not the risk factor determines it, because I also think in the public guardian that they had some law changes this last legislative session, so I see we're going to have to update some policies anyway, and so we may refer this again just for audit to make sure we've really gotten it right. So I'd suggest we close.
We're also closing number 8 as well, it looks like.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it looks like we decided not to implement that, so yeah. Good catch. I didn't have that one starred.
Okay, any comments on the public guardian follow-up? I think we're good with closing those. Sure.
Okay. And then on the last one, the 2017 CAFR, I'm recommending we close the first 3. We have implemented procedures from last year, and we are in the middle of our audit now. So the final one, we are actually having a meeting on October 30th. To narrow this down and get something in the policy regarding the finding from the Transportation Division. So I'm going to ask that we wait until next meeting to talk about that one.
Okay.
Just a question. So maybe just a question in general process-wise here. So I noticed that one of the things we're doing is waiting until the whole audit section closes before we take it to the Board of Supervisors just to accept it and move it. Is that the way we want to stay instead of, I feel like a slight disconnect that we don't get them to the Board of Supervisors to say that the audit is really progressed and moved and closed. They're accepting the audit, they're accepting the staff recommendations, but I don't know that the audit committee's necessarily giving sufficient updates to the board level. And so I think maybe that's one thing we can iron out here is, you know, we're getting better and better at the control systems and things like that. So just as a discussion for all of us, should it be that we take them to the board once we close them here and clear them at the board level, or do you want to wait until that entire audit closes? What's your guys' thoughts?
Do you want me to tell you what I was planning on doing? I was planning on taking these to the board and having them closed. Last meeting, we didn't have a motion to close anything because a lot of them said, we're getting a new ERP system, we're waiting. So I had to do a little work on that. But now that work's done, and so if you guys recommend closure, then I was going to take these items to the board and say, hey, we want to close these. There's still a few items open, but we want to close these ones. I mean, that was what I was going to do to kind of show our progress.
I really think it's important that we're constantly having a dialogue at the Board of Supervisors level, that we don't let things get out a year or a year and a half without a recognition that we're actually working on them. And so I think also, though, when it goes to the Board of Supervisors, do you think that so you should have two files, right? One that here's all that we're recommending closure, but I think it's important to remind them of the open items. Because I think often I'm more familiar at that level because I serve on this committee, but I don't think it's necessarily so for the remainder of the board members. So I'd like to see you take the closed items on one spreadsheet and then the open items on a separate, just as information on the open items for them, but ask for a action item on the closure. Just
so some items we've already closed. So did you want me to, because I can probably do it on the one spreadsheet and show some as closed, some as recommending closure, and some is still open.
Color code them or something.
See, yeah, something like that. So you could be able to see the entire audit and our progress.
I'm okay with that so long as it's easier to see it. I think it's hard unless you're doing these every day, all day, to realize.
Right.
And that's fine. If you can add some color coding so that the recommendation at the board level would, I don't know, maybe we make everything we're closing green because things are rosy instead of red. I don't know.
Red, yeah.
Yeah, instead of red.
The
but
ones already done are brown. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
Right.
I'm comfortable if we add some color coding in there. Do you guys think it's good to give the whole report to the board just to, again, I just feel more comfortable that we're all in the know.
Yeah, and as people leave and come on to boards, they want to probably see the whole picture. So I agree. I think that's a great idea. Thank you. Yeah.
And also, like you said, just to keep showing continued forward progress. That's why I'd like to see it.
I did have a question on the first item on the CAFR.
Uh-huh.
And it's talks about, like, you know, we had a cash audit. I think last time we did an audit on internal audit on cash was in 2014, maybe. But this issue, what was specifically done to close this item?
This was a journal entry review issue. so we get a bunch of statements for our restricted accounts. And those statements were not included with the journal entry, just the recap of those statements was included.
Got it.
And the recap was wrong.
I remember this discussion.
To do a typo on the recap? Yes, so to go forward, the reviewer's getting everything to make sure.
Okay, good. Any other questions, comments, concerns on the CAFR? Okay, I think we're good with closing 1, 2, and 3.
Can I have you guys make a motion to approve all those items being closed? Please.
I move to do a clue. I move to close the items as recommended on the spreadsheet and presented today.
I'll second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Passes unanimously.
Thank you very much.
Next item, 6B, possible action. Provide direction upon review and agree upon procedures to I. Bailey for and staff regarding the fire overtime overtime study and temporary staffing study, current audit work program update. So I think
Sherry, can I have a packet now? Thank you.
Yeah, and actually they've got them.
Yeah, I'll take one now.
If you want to grab that.
That one, the other one I knew by heart.
So on this one, I wasn't sure, Dan, are you going to lead this or is Sherry leading the discussion?
No, I definitely can.
Okay.
For the record,
thanks.
Dan Carter, partner with Ed Bailey, the city's internal auditor. And maybe if it's okay to ask for maybe some direction, if we could just jump back to the previous topic real quick and just, I know it's in our contract to do some follow-up work on the prior findings, and I just wasn't sure kind of when and at what point you wanted our involvement in clearing findings or making sure they're cleared, if there's any sort of additional procedures or re-audit that you guys want on some of those. I'd maybe just, if you can provide your direction if there's ones that, particular ones that you think we need to be involved with. Otherwise, if you're comfortable clearing them, we'll stay out of it.
I think what you're going to see is potentially we will ask for a re-audit on the Public Guardian. I think we want to wait a little bit because we have a new Public Guardian, and I think it would be most advantageous for her to get an audit as she's a 6 months, a year in. Then it would be a value to her, because I know a lot of times people think audits are negative or they don't really want them, but they can be so valuable to really help you and guide you in the right practices. So I would say that the Public Guardian will definitely be one, and then potentially we'll circle back on P-cards.
So we'll just wait for your direction to point out additional re-audits at a later date. Perfect, that works. So as it relates to the fire overtime study, I think you guys had the kind of the draft audit program, the procedures that we were recommending. You can read that. I'm not sure it's going to get that much bigger. So as far as what we're looking for direction from the audit committee, just making sure that we're on the right track with the procedures that are presented. If there's additional items that you feel we need to touch on as part of this audit, we certainly can add those to the audit program. Or the other concern would be if there's particular items on here that are being done internally, either by the fire department or by the finance department, we certainly don't want to duplicate efforts. So just wanted to make sure we were good in that aspect. We also wanted to confirm which fiscal years we're looking at, if we're just looking at 18 or if you want to go back several years, looking for direction on timing, as well as possibly a discussion on sampling. We will use sampling as part of these audits, whether you'd like us to do some sort of combination of judgmentally picking a few and then doing a random sample. We can't project errors that we find to the population with judgmental selections. So I think that's where the benefit of coming up with at least some random sample. We are, you know, then just hoping that if there's an error that it falls into the sample versus if we've got some judgment in looking at things that might look unusual, we might be able to better identify issues. So that's kind of what we're looking for. And if there's any other questions or concerns for us on the particular audit program.
Dan, have you guys, what initial work have you guys done to get to, you know, to this level of detail.
Absolutely. So I guess that's kind of part of the discussion on the risk assessment process. We certainly have started that. Questionnaires have gone out to all the department heads. We received all of those back and are analyzing those as part of that giant spreadsheet of numbers as far as where the risks lie. We've got that a little bit more organized with some specific areas of risk. So we have done some preliminary high-level understanding of policies and procedures, but a lot of those steps are in here. Those are, you know, the very first one is interviews and gathering data. That hasn't begun yet, just making sure that we're good with this before we get started.
So one of the first questions is what period of time,
you
know, right? And so I guess it depends on how large your samples and things like that, but preferably if it can fit within the budget, I think you should at least look at a two-year period. I prefer not to have one-year audits because I don't think they necessarily give you comparative, or there might be an outlier or something where I think a two-year minimum, if not three, but I can live with two. I don't want to overburden the fire department with getting old data that they may have put in boxes and stored. So I want to make sure that, and again, the purpose of an audit is to be useful. I really don't think there's any issues in the fire department, but I think it can only help management to have a clear understanding if there is anything slipping through. So what would be of more value to you?
Sure. Sean Slayman, fire chief, for the record. I would definitely recommend at least a two-year sample.
Okay.
One of the primary reasons is that is we've had 2 years ago, the last fiscal year, we had a significant vacancy rate.
Mm-hmm.
And this year we've had a much more controlled vacancy rate. And so I think that'll give you a little bit better snapshot.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, potentially 3 years, I don't want to put my staff under undue burden also.
Right.
But at least looking at it from a two-year perspective and then maybe evaluating further on that. But I think that'll give you a better view of fire department overtime and how it operates and how the staffing models really impact that.
Okay. I'm okay with two. And then I guess we could leave it up that I hate to say it this way, so that you would start with two, but that if you uncovered issues that you think would be beneficial to the fire chief and to the city, you would add the third year, if that makes any sense, so that you start with a scope of two, but then sometimes you get into things and say, you know what, I think it would really...
To expand a sample.
To expand the sample if necessary, but only if something... shows it so poor. Sometimes it'll
sure.
show so bad in a report that you go, wait a minute, I need the third year to.
And we could communicate that along
yeah.
the way. Absolutely.
So I'd like that as you guys could work together on whether the third, but
yeah.
do two.
And to match it to the city's fiscal years, 18 and 17?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yes.
Perfect.
Yes.
Sounds good.
That'd be great. Yeah. And I'm assuming, looking at this one, this was dealing with the fire on this, but I assume this is also, we're saying to look at 2 years on the temporary contract. Is that on another
that's,
sheet?
That's, yeah, the second sheet.
Is that on another one? I didn't see it.
And that one, I think we were kind of coming back to more from a number of contracts perspective.
The late material one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, they're both under 6 million.
Did the fire chief have, you've reviewed all of the procedures that have been recommended? Is there anything that bothered you in the recommended procedures?
I have not actually seen all of those yet, but I am open to meeting and discussing those, so
nope.
No concerns.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. Again, it's not our objective to overburden workloads, but to get where we're going, okay? I didn't see anything else that.
I didn't see anything that looked overly burdensome, Lori.
Yeah. or that wasn't also not going to give me information, right? So, again, we're always playing that fine line, right? You don't want to overburden, but at the same time, I want value in the actual audit.
And that's certainly something we can bring back or communicate on an ongoing basis, just kind of as far as sample sizes and years and where we are. You know, we want to be able to return something if we're running up against the budget for this project and we think there's additional items that need to be tested to get you what you're looking for. We can have that discussion, you know, as it gets close, not that we cut off work and haven't gotten what you need, but and we typically, I think we would typically look for sample sizes about 25 random people selected, and then maybe a judgmental five additional based on if something looks unusual to the to us.
Have you guys audited any fire departments before, like in the office here in Reno?
We do have, I think, four fire departments in the area as clients. Visit Sparks, North Lake Tahoe, Truckee Meadows, and Tahoe Douglas down Douglas County.
Just wondering if there's any way to leverage best practices. And I know, obviously, the staffing model and how that is implemented for the fire department is going to be kind of the, you know, what we follow as far as the guidelines. Question is that the best way to do it? And I don't really know that much about fire departments or how they're staffed, or, and that's why I kind of rely on you guys as far as best practices, so that we're, you know, we make sure we're providing the best service possible to the
Absolutely.
City.
Yeah, and I think, well, so that might get us a little bit out of scope if we're talking more performance audit or, you know, the efficiencies and effectiveness of versus this is specific to fire overtime. That's certainly something we could, and there is some, as it relates to this overtime issue, we certainly have some analysis that we would like to do, kind of big picture, trend analysis and comparative analysis, as well as some best practices on policies and procedures. But as far as a performance audit or an operational audit of the fire department, that would be a different topic. Yeah.
No, that makes sense. I was talking more along the lines of I don't know if the right word's optimal staffing, or, you know, try to optimize it between you know, and maybe
employees,
your experience
and
as far as auditing three or four other fire departments. You know, does anything look out of line compared
yes.
to other departments?
That definitely we can do as part of this. Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
I just had a question on your sampling, because there's, in my mind, not that they are, because they reimburse at different rates, that there's two types of overtime in the fire department. So one that the taxpayers of Carson City are responsible for, and their contract deals with that, and then you have overtime in which they are dispatched to go give mutual aid to another state.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have all of those different. So I just want to make sure that the sampling's going to ensure that it's going to pick up the city overtime versus the federal fires or the out of state. I don't want to get all 25 samples showing up on the federal or the other reimbursable.
Absolutely. Well, and that's a great point. I think we do have some leeway in that. Is the audit committee concerned about what's reimbursed by the feds, or is it really just what the city's on the hook for? I mean, that's, we can focus in on that. Or would you like to see both? As long as we cover both, we're...
I think I want to see both, but I'll give it in two different ways. What I see when you do service from the fire department to an outside governmental entity that you're going to fight the fire for, there's a lot of check and balances there, because they'll have a duty roster at the fire in Modesto or something, right? And so they don't want to pay, so they're going to check really hard against what's submitted, and then the city's going to work really hard to get every dime we need to get reimbursed. So I think there's a lot more check and balance already built into the system on those. And so I don't mind you checking a few or whatever, but I don't think it's the heavier area to review, because I think there's a ton of check and balances there. And you can tell me if I'm wrong or you haven't seen that in others. I think the part that you want to make sure is the city's not missing a reimbursement. They forgot to claim Joe that went to the fire. I mean, I would think that'd be the error that would happen is we missed a body. Well, I think it's just a whole different reimbursable form. It talks about every piece of equipment that was deployed, and they owe us. See, I'm getting good at this, huh? I'm like, so I just think there's a lot more. And so if I'm going to expense dollars for an audit on our side, I'd rather do it in the area, again, that I think has more, some of the stuff you were talking about will come out, if that makes sense. So I don't know if you can separate it into, like, two samples and pick 20 out of that and 5 out of this. I don't know. Just a thought.
One of the concerns I brought up at a prior meeting was the state tax implications of those first responders going across state lines. And I don't know, you know, how that's handled and who the reimbursing, you know, maybe it depends on who the reimbursing department is. If it's the state of California versus, you know, some other governmental entity, I'm not sure, but that may be something to look at in scope as far as tax implications of payments based on wherever the work's done.
Maybe the fire chief knows, who does the, we don't get W-2s from California or 1099s. We give all the money to the employee. How does that
correct
work?
So
that's why
kind of synopsize when we go out of state for a mutual aid, we have several contracts that we sign at the beginning of every year that include salary surveys and everything. We're responsible for updating our current salary model, so if there's pay raises, decreases, whatever, all of that is submitted to each agency. So California, for instance, Cal OES, when we respond to there, if we are there for over a certain time period, we are paid what's called portal to portal. So from the time we are dispatched till the time we return home from that incident, we are compensated. And depending on the rank of the personnel, you are paid off of that contract that we submitted at the beginning of each year. In addition to that, we get reimbursement for vehicle costs depending on the size and type of vehicle. And while at the incident, all of our meals and incidentals are covered by the incident. We don't pay for anything. From a tax purpose, if we were to purchase something out of state related to the firefighting expense that would be utilized on a P-card, that I couldn't answer correctly, but I think that would be subject to California sales tax at that point. We wouldn't get our exemption at that point.
The city's getting the hourly wage. It's not tied. It's just tied by the class of the firefighter,
correct,
an EMS, a captain.
Correct.
And it's an hourly. So that hourly isn't given to the – we're billing it.
We are billing it, and we receive a reimbursement.
At a flat rate. Now, the employee actually makes – whatever their particular
whatever there is.
Is,
yeah. So we depending on the contract, it may be the medium salary base for a fire captain, for instance, and you may have some that are below that wage. So we would technically make a little money on that if it was above the wage.
Right.
Usually it is at the top of the wage that we submit for those salary surveys, so we're covered to the dime.
And I think that's why I'm less concerned about those particular ones, because it's just a reimbursement based on hours.
Do not get out of their base camps. You do not get released without all of your documentation done. Trust me, I have been caught up in that before.
I used to do some for the state for the fire, so I'm like, whoo, lots and lots
of
paper.
You do not get out without all your paperwork done.
So when a reimbursement comes through, the reimbursement is directly to the Carson City Fire Department.
Correct, and then it goes back to.
Okay, got
it. Yeah, and the employee will have already been paid through their salary and through their payroll system.
Got it. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Thank you. Appreciate it. All right, Dan.
Did that give you all you needed, Dan?
I think so. Maybe you had a little discussion more on timing of procedures, just information requests. I know the city is currently working through their external audit. I'm not sure if now is a good time, or we do have staff available over coming up in a few weeks. I don't know if that works.
That works fine.
Okay.
We're at the end of our audit, so that works fine.
Sounds good. Perfect.
So the next one's the temporary staffing.
Yeah.
Independent contractor compliance.
And kind of similar discussion as it relates to these procedures and just looking for additional direction. Any concerns on what's here? Anything missing, going overboard, timing, sampling? Kind of a preliminary question to that would be, so we've got, again, kind of two different buckets here. We've got temporary staffing, you know, seasonal employees versus, you know, longer term, you know, contract type employees coming, you know, back on contract basis. Is there a direction there as far as what you'd like us to look at or not look at in scope, out of scope?
I actually think both are in scope because I think compliance is a big issue for me personally, right? That I think often we can not comply by the letter. You know, there's a spirit of what you're trying to accomplish, and then there's what you should do. So I think both are in, should be reviewed to determine. And I think what happens, too, is as you use, I'm not saying temporary contracts are bad. I'm not, because I think they have a lot of value. But I think we forget oftentimes that sometimes it's the easier way to go than to have to analyze. And so I'm more concerned that do we have policies and procedures and things that trigger how often you look at it and say, should this still be a temporary situation or should this be an employee role? And so I'm looking for you to do both in the scope.
Just for me to understand the scope of what we're doing here, just how prevalent are temporary staff or contract employees within the city? Just I'm talking ballpark. Is it 10 or is it like 100? I'm just
trying no, it's well, yeah, it's quite high. I honestly don't know exactly how many employees because some are seasonal. Just, you know, for the rec center, some are part-time just for a big project. So it really varies quite a bit. But I know for Marathon, we do spend about $1.5 million a year for temporary staffing. And then we also have part-time city employees. Do we want to look at that as well or just the contracted employees?
Well, I think the part-time employees at least go through our HR system, so the internal controls all exist in that environment, the same that happens to a full-time employee. My concern is in the temporaries, you don't necessarily have all the internal controls and checkboxes and key controls and, you know, just some of the things just I think get potentially bypassed. Well, because they're not. That's right. They're not our employees. And I just think sometimes we need to double check that we're not, for simplicity's sake of getting something done, we're missing a big picture. Maybe that's a good way to say it.
Do all temporary staffing and independent contractors come through Marathon?
No, I'm sorry. We've got four different companies that we can contract through, but the vast majority do come from Marathon.
Okay, and then from a background check, bonding, licensing, so forth, is that all handled through the city makes sure that the agency that we're going through is proper, you know, they're doing background checks on their temps that they're providing us and that they're bonded and licensed?
Yeah, the companies are reputable, absolutely. They also pay the workers' comp on those employees, so if something does happen, they're fully insured.
One other question. Do we have temporary employees that are basically indefinitely contracted, like they theoretically maybe should be employees, but they're, do we have that instance, or are they, do we have a cap on how long a position or that person can be temped to the city?
No, there's no cap. I can think of a few temporary employees who are part-time and hired through Marathon. They're not city employees that have been that way for, yeah, several years.
And I'm not an expert in this area by any means, but I know there's some regulations around that from the, I think it's a Fair Labor Standards Act, which is a federal, there's at some point where, you know, federal government's going to say, hey, this person's been working for the city for, you know, X amount of time. You know, in reality, this should be an employee. Are we trying to circumvent, you know,
well, I state think that has more to do with independent contractors versus employees, right?
No, I was talking if they've been a temporary staff for 3 years, mm-hmm. right? There's federal regulations around some of that stuff.
Interesting.
You can't just keep somebody indefinitely as a temporary employee. And I know when I worked at bigger companies, this was a concern. We literally could not temp an employee for over 12 months. And it had to do something with the FLSA, Fair Labor Standards Act, and then that the employee should actually be an employee because, you know, essentially in all essence, they are working for the city full time. So
I'd have to check with Marathon, or I'm sorry, HR on that, because I'm not familiar with all those standards, but I definitely will. And I know that the companies provide insurance, health insurance, and they do provide some benefits to their employees. So it's not, you know, completely like we're just using them on a contract.
No, that makes sense. There's some federal regulations around it, and I, like I said, I don't know. I'm not an expert, but and maybe Dan, if this is something you guys have audited before, it could be included.
It's definitely step one would be obtaining all that information, making sure checking compliance with those standards.
Okay.
So we definitely could do it as part of our.
I've had a few staffing companies as clients, and they've had employees for multiple years that were temps at one specific site. So. I'm going to check it out myself, just for curiosity.
I think often what happens is they're going to use the temporary because you have some expertise of people that have worked for the government, and they are drawing their PERS pension, and they don't want to go to work back for a governmental entity because they'll lose their pension. So they go and obtain the employment through the temporary route. Mm-hmm. So that again, and that's how they circumvent the PERS law to do it that way. So I think you're going to find a whole myriad of issues when you look through these, and I think the most important part is just what we're getting to. We want to make sure we're not violating any rules inadvertently, you know, and that we're doing a best practice, and again, more importantly for me, that I just want to make sure that good services are being provided by the employees on the Marathon contract, and that we're in compliance. What to do, like 2 years on this too, a scope of 2 years?
Yeah, I think 2 years, and I think mm-hmm. I, you know, personally, using some judgmental standpoint around the length of the
time,
you know, length mm-hmm. of the individual being contracted, I think would be worthwhile. And then just approval processes as far as making sure that position, you know, was adequately approved by the net. I don't know what policies and procedures are in place around that, but making sure that we're following those policies and procedures.
Absolutely.
It looks good. So I think that wraps up the discussion on that.
You have enough direction on what
Absolutely.
You need.
Yeah. So I think the next agenda item is the cybersecurity services. And so this was something we kind of discussed all along the way, just our ability to provide these services to the city now. We certainly have a fairly well-developed cybersecurity consulting practice at Ide Bailey. I think it's a good benefit to our clients, and these are kind of some of the basic services that we provide to various entities across industries, but certainly didn't want to, again, repeat services that are maybe being handled internally or miss something. If there's something not on this list that the city would, you know, is interested in or has, you know, thoughts about, we certainly have other departments that we could go to and see if we could put something together for the city, just making sure that there's no holes in this area given kind of the environment that we work in now. So,
so Dan, is this like a, is this something you're proposing to us to, for Ide Bailey to do as,
yeah,
be, so, as part of the audit
or process? as a kind of an additional audit would be kind of a cybersecurity audit, the risk assessment process, any of these particular services that whether it's the audit committee or the city's internal IT department feel would be a benefit to the city. It's certainly not a all or nothing thing, but just an area that I think has is a risk at a lot of entities and maybe can sometimes be overlooked, and we can do a lot of this stuff fairly efficiently at this point. And the city is probably a little bit larger of an entity. Our sample sizes may be a little bit increased as far as number of IP addresses we're checking, that sort of thing. But could fit this project into, you know, the budget.
One question. We had talked about this a while ago, and there were two hangups. One was that we were using a lot of the state system. The other was we were transferring off. So is now a good time to even think about that? Or
yeah.
Because the rationale that
Eric, you may remember, we had
Yeah.
Yeah, most of the backloads on the state, so it was really a state, this, you know, more of a...
Eric von Schulman, CIO for the city. So the stuff that you're talking about is our backbone is the state of Nevada right now, and we currently still are using that. We're trying to migrate off funding and everything, trying to get that all straightened out. So we do have more services that we are providing internally, not going through the state. So we do have that right now as we transition through, so they can do like penetration testing is one of the ones that we had talked about in the past. So we have some areas in that, and hopefully in the next couple of months we'll almost be completely off the state's backbone. That's our goal right now.
So Eric, do you see a value in doing some of this cybersecurity? Do you see that at, like, in 6 months you find the value to make sure that when you guys migrated off you didn't turn around and inadvertently open up something? You go, oh, that was a great idea we had, but maybe we should have somebody come in and just run through it and make sure.
Right. And I kind of reviewed last meeting and everything, and the way we left it was we were going to move the cybersecurity towards the end of this fiscal year, and I said that should work within our time frame. Is kind of how we left that.
That works for you guys too, to put it in the May, June arena. Yeah. Okay.
Right now, what's the timeline on go live for the new ERP?
ERP.
July 1st.
Which portion?
The financials.
Financials is going to be July 1st.
July 1st.
Yeah.
Okay.
Financials right now, and right behind that will be the HR component of that, and also the EnerGov, which is the community development side of things, business license and permitting.
The so the HR is what, probably July, end of July? July?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So the two that are in process right now are the financials and the EnerGov, which is the community development.
Okay.
Both of those are in implementation phase right now. HR component is to kick off in December, and it's like a 8 to 9
Does the new ERP system, does it have automated electronic time and attendance instead of spreadsheets?
Yes, that's part of the HR component.
Okay, good. Thank you.
And let's see, aren't we also, how close are we, boy, we really did them all, if you're, aren't we also doing the assessor's system is in
DevNet
process.
They're in now. That one's in development right now as well. That one, they've actually upped the go live to, for the assessor side, to mid to late April.
Right.
The latest I've heard, and the tax collection side is actually late July.
So we really are, I don't know, I think it's really coming timely again as we're implementing everything to make sure we're not leaving a back door open somewhere and go, oh, that was wonderful. So,
right.
Okay, so May
or
June.
That's why we're
bringing
it in-house, so we can control it more as more and more stuff goes to software as a service, internet based.
Okay, thank you, Eric.
And so at that point, maybe, so where would we be, January, March or April, audit committee meeting, come back and discuss kind of in detail, the entire process and perfect. Any other questions for us on the cyber piece?
No, not right now. So next time, 6D.
Can I make a comment real quick? I'm sorry. There's
sure.
another meeting at 6. So we can't stay much past 5. Okay, just want to make sure.
I have to make another meeting too.
Okay.
Okay.
We're on the right path.
Yep.
Yeah, I think we're getting close. And so we had provided kind of an initial risk assessment of the data that we had pulled together based on the questionnaires that were completed by each of the department heads. And so this is kind of a little bit more summarized version of adding all those numbers together and coming to actual scores as far as potential risks. In the 10 areas across the top, which are public exposure, governance and stakeholder risk, business operations impact, reputation impact, liquidity and negotiability, performance risk, legal and regulatory risks, size of audit unit, revenue impact, expense risk, and then the last column is kind of the overall combined risk. And this does go down through, all the various city departments. Obviously, the higher the score, the higher the risk, and kind of classified into these individual areas.
So real quick, Dan, is this a different format than the one that was included in the packet?
It is, yeah.
Okay.
This is just, it's the same information, just summarized and color-coded for ease of discussion.
Red means bad.
Yeah.
Red means
risk.
Yeah. More risk to look at. And so this is kind of where we are in the phase. So the questionnaire process has been completed. We've got these 6 departments based on the questionnaire where we have some areas that we would like to follow up with departments with verbal conversations to try and clear some of these risks, based on their particular responses to the questionnaire. We've got some flags we want to talk through and make sure that we've got a good understanding. So kind of where we go from here is that through some of those conversations, these risks may be lowered and may be able to be cleared based on, a more detailed understanding of what's going on in those departments. If they can't, then that's where we would recommend specific internal audits over these areas, whether it be, you can see there's some of these kind of trend across departments, kind of that 1, 2, 3 column in a few departments that we could maybe develop a citywide audit program to... Yes, yeah. Versus some of these other ones that are more specific, the revenue risk in the Public Works Department might be a specific internal audit program for that department and that specific risk, kind of narrowing it down a little bit.
Was the questionnaire that sent out, was it the same for every department?
I believe it was, yes.
Okay.
And so kind of where we've come to at this point, I thought... Is more to kind of get a little bit of feedback from you guys. I think it sounds like there's some issues just in the preliminary conversations and clearing items that we can circle back to, but kind of based on where we are with the risk assessment process and just getting feedback on potential future projects, and these can be narrowed down and defined a little bit better as we go through, especially if some of these risks end up being cleared. But just some of the preliminary thoughts we had is just we've got, like in column 10 here, we've got a lot of, or several departments with, you know, just significant expenditures that the city's responsible for. So that would be more of a kind of a citywide internal audit of departmental budget monitoring. You know, in our experience, the finance department does a good job of monitoring, you know, kind of budget actuals as a whole, but just making sure that those individual departments understand their numbers and understand their budgets, and are they, you know, are they managing to those budgets? And so if any of these strike a nerve, we can certainly flush them out as we go through and come back with potentials. Again, we've got kind of this 2, 3, and 6 area, kind of more on the performance audit side of the internal audit process. You know, we definitely, there's certain departments kind of with these, the lower scores and the performance risk, that have performance measures and run the department in accordance with those performance measures. There's departments, you know, with some of these higher scores that don't really have, that aren't really looking at particular performance measures and operating to those. So again, more of a citywide audit on performance measurement, operational efficiencies, just to track the effectiveness, especially some of these departments with higher scores are kind of central service agencies that then their time gets charged out to the other departments, and just making sure that those departments are performing at the level they're supposed to, and that those departments are getting what they are paying for from those departments. And some of these departments don't have the performance measures in place to be managing back to. So again, kind of a citywide performance measure, operational effectiveness, internal audit program would be something we would recommend. In 9 over here, we've got some high scores in revenue impact. We've definitely got a lot of departments that are overseeing a lot of revenue coming into the city. A few departments overseeing a lot of revenue coming into the city. So just, you know, kind of a citywide fee schedule audit, just going through and making sure that these departments have a set fee schedule and have updated that fee schedule and have, you know, are thinking about it, looking at it, you know, not just going at the same fees that have always been charged. And so a potential future audit there. We've got 1 and 4 here across several departments. Just kind of this reputational impact has got kind of a high score back from a lot of departments. And kind of a thought here would be some sort of internal audit of social media, just understanding the city's policies over, you know, the... Absolutely, and just, yes, if there's even policies and procedures of what employees can and can't post, and whether it's on the city's behalf or, you know, what's out there that employees or former employees are posting, and whether the city is reviewing those sites for potential issues, if the city has a plan to respond to those, even as much as, you know, if the city needs to communicate issues to its constituents through social media, you know, policies surrounding that, if that's in place, or and then obviously the back-end monitoring compliance with all those, this is kind of the social policies and procedures. What else we've got? 9, another potential revenue audit. Just there's a lot of revenues coming to the city that are paid indirectly through third-party sources, and just a potential third-party revenue internal audit, just making sure that the city understands what they're supposed to be getting and are getting what they're due. And the last one, kind of similar to what we had talked about with the expenses, just kind of the city's overhead rate. I think this is kind of in 6 here. Just again, back to the performance measures and just making sure if there's service level agreements between departments and that those charges make sense based on what they're doing for some of these other departments. So potential future, if there's any that that strike a nerve with the audit committee or with management, we certainly would be willing to talk about them further, and especially if these reds don't turn into yellows or we go to lighter yellow or gray.
Can we get a copy of this?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, because I saw this and I thought I was the only one who didn't know what this was. So, yeah, that would help tremendously. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, right. Definitely, yeah. And we'll continue to, so we're still in the phase of kind of detailing this out and making sure that these numbers are accurate based on those departments. So we'll continue to work through that over the next couple of weeks and then send this out in a more final format.
Yeah, I think I'd be more interested after the second run.
Perfect.
And then we can start prioritizing that.
Can I ask you one of the questions I heard you mention on the fees? So I don't know if audit or best practice or something might be beneficial. I know that a committee I sat on last night for hours upon hours is the Parks and Rec is looking across its fee schedule, because as you said, I don't think it's changed the fees for, I don't know, I don't want to go on a limb and say 15 years or whatever, a very long time. And so, but it's really difficult to do because of course that generally equates to we're going to increase the fees, because if you haven't touched them in 15 years, and so then the community gets upset and says, well, I like to use the community center and I like to use the Bonanza room and the Sierra room. But are you saying that you have a team that can really help with a best practice in the fee setting to help weave through that on how you set the rates in the first place, what the right rationale or a best practice is in actually determining what the rate should be?
Yeah, I'm not sure we have thought that one through at that level of detail at this point. Kind of preliminary discussions, we're just going out and making, you know, pulling current fee structures and seeing when they had been updated. You know, we certainly have a lot of information on a lot of entities, and that's a potential we could do some further analysis on what those fees should be. But again, there's the political side of whether that even matters. I mean, we could tell you they're going to be higher, but if the city's not comfortable raising them, then maybe that's not a key area.
Maybe even so, are you able even to paint the picture for us on what the cost recovery is? Because I don't know that we actually have that data either. Because one of the, so are you able to help it at least in that, to say, okay, the theater costs us X to run it and you're recovering Y, and so that ratio is 40, you know, you're 60% out.
Uh-huh.
And maybe even, I don't know if that would benefit to really give us some assistance in the park and rec arena, because I think we have some real issues there. And I know that data helps you make better decisions, even if you don't have the political will to do it, at least you understand
where you are.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know, maybe that's one. Again, I look at audits as two things, right? That their value is to make sure that you're protecting the assets of the public and that you're using their dollars wisely, but I think it also has the opportunity to give you effectiveness and efficiencies that you should apply. So maybe this particular type of work would be an efficiency and help. Because I know that it's hard time-wise for staff maybe sometimes to put those data elements together. So maybe we'll take that into consideration, or we'll ask the head of Parks and Recreation Open Space if that would be of value.
Yeah, I know in the general ledger we do have it broken down, so I can tell you how much revenue the MAC's bringing in, for instance, and then what its expenses are. So we can tell exactly how much we're recovering of those expenses and how much the general fund's paying for. So,
do we have any historical? I know we have these audit tracker reports going back several years. I'm not sure what year they started, but We started looking at risk assessment in areas that we haven't audited in a long time. Is there, do we have a tracker of basically, hey, we audited accounts payable and it was a full scope audit in whatever it was, 2017 last year? Mm-hmm. We did P card in 2017. We did cash in 2014. Right. Just these verticals of, you know, and I'm, you know, Michael may have a better understand. Yeah. Is there a way we could document that so we can see, hey, we haven't audited, you know, payroll in 5 years or something like that? I just as an example.
Yeah, we have these tracking sheets for every single meeting back to the beginning of this committee. So we could go back and see exactly what we talked about and what audits went on and had the findings. And we've never created a spreadsheet to say we did this in this year and closed it in this year. But I could potentially do that. Might take a little time, but I could do that.
I think it would be helpful to help us make sure that we're circling back on certain areas. And then just as far as what area was audited and the scope of that, you know, project. So if it was very narrow, we'd want to make sure that maybe there's other areas that we want to go back and revisit or that we haven't visited yet. And then I honestly think an indicator is how many findings were, how many issues were, rose from that audit. So if there's, you know, like I remember the cash handling audit, there was like 14 findings or something like that. That seems like, to me, seems like a lot. So it might be an area that's more sensitive. We may want to go back and review that sooner than later. So that would be helpful, you know, from a risk assessment standpoint. Help them make sure that we're, you know, identifying each possible area that we want to potentially take a look at.
So I just want to understand, do you want to see all the past audits and findings that we've closed?
Just the
year, what it was, and its
just
scope.
The year, what it was, yeah, and its scope. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. In a summary format. We,
and number of findings.
And number,
yeah,
of
number
findings.
Of findings.
Okay.
So it was, you know, accounts payable. You know, full scope, had whatever, five findings, you know, and then the year. I think that would be helpful if we could kind of matrix that.
And that's certainly something we could do, Sherry, too, as part of just the administration of internal audit. Pull that together. Yeah, absolutely.
Because it does help. I don't know if you go back up to the top so we can see the headers. So, because that's not part of the risk assessment to have a field that indicates they've never been audited, because I think oftentimes that should be a risk element, that even though it may be minor, it may be this, maybe a small audit, I think every single section should have an audit at least within its 10 years. I don't care how small it is. You know, the scope will be limited, obviously, but, and like you said, maybe it gets picked up in one of those broader audits that you're talking about, that we're going to audit this across everything. But I would just like, that's a good add, I think, into the risk element to say, you know, this group's never seen anybody.
As you're putting that together, I like to see it sorted by year, but also by department. So the department, the history of this department's audits and this department's audits, that way we can kind of see them both laid out.
Like you said, who hasn't seen us?
Exactly, yeah.
So, Dan, does that help with direction on this risk assessment?
Absolutely, yeah. I think those are great suggestions. Yeah. I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, Nelson, I think the only last thing we had, we've been monitoring the fraud hotline since August and have not received any information. So that's either a good thing that nothing's coming in, or it's a bad thing because it's not working, right? So I'm not sure if there's a way just to follow up and make sure that everything's in place.
Yeah, I'll remember.
Just to, yeah.
Just to
see
test
and,
it.
Yeah,
test
perfect.
It. Yeah.
So, Dan, what will you guys be working on here the next 2 to 3 months before our next committee meeting?
Absolutely. So I think we could get through the two studies that were presented. I imagine we can hit the ground running in the next few weeks on on one, or if not both, probably just do one at a time, get through one. So I think we've definitely got some time open up early November to send some staff out, start pulling data and getting through it. So I would hope that we would have at least a draft of findings and potential report at the next meeting on both those studies, and then.
Okay, great.
And this will be a little bit more tied down. That we can get out to you guys as soon as it's done versus waiting for the next meeting. And then maybe a detailed discussion on recommended future audits and getting some approval on projects for.
Do we want to try to set the next meeting date? On the spotlight.
I certainly would. If we could do late January, early February, that should give us plenty of time to get through it.
We want to try January 29th. That's a Tuesday.
Yeah, looks good.
Okay. Is this a good time? 3:30-ish? Okay.
Yep. 3:30 on the 29th?
It lets Dan polish it all the way up to 1 o'clock. Yeah.
Oh, then we have late material, though.
No, we'll be in better shape for the next week.
Okay.
Good.
3:30 January 29th. Believe it or not, 2019.
Just that quick.
Unbelievable. Okay.
Final public comment. Did you enjoy it?
I did.
Did you learn anything?
I think I did.
See, good. He's taking it.
Okay, any public comment at this time? Hearing none.
Move to adjourn.
Move to adjourn. He is adjourned at 5 o'clock.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you very much.